Hello and welcome to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I'm your host, Matt Tardio. Today's episode is being sponsored by Trade Coffee. As the Ukrainian conflict is pushing into its third year, a lot of people have been wondering what is the actual death toll taking place inside of Ukraine on both the Ukrainian side and the Russian side. Now, last month, President Zelensky came out and said that over 31,000 Ukrainians had lost their lives. However, U.S. officials have came out and said that the number of Ukrainians KIA was actually closer to 70,000. Current estimates by international intelligence officials put the Russian losses at well over 300,000, some as high as 500,000 and more. However, new information has came out since the Russians launched a new offensive to take advantage of the Ukrainians running out of arms and ammunition provided mainly by the United States of America. In December of 2023, U.S. supplies to Ukraine ran out, and since then, the United States has struggled to pass a new funding bill. Now, the United States has supplied roughly 50% of all the equipment and munitions going into Ukraine, with the EU making up the vast majority of the rest. However, 50% is still more than enough to have a huge impact on the battlefield. Now, by late spring of 2023, the Ukrainian counteroffensive was in full swing, particularly in the south near the village of Robotnya. I have pulled up the deep state map because it allows us to rewind time and see exactly where the Russian and Ukrainian lines were on June 1st of 2023. This is going to give you an overall perspective for what Ukraine did versus where they are at today. We're going to focus right here and start zooming in. Right here, you can see where Robotnya is located. Currently, the village is about 50% under control of Russia. However, Ukraine had a long-fought counteroffensive in order to take that terrain back, and due to the munition shortages, Ukraine is in danger of losing the village. This is June of 2023. If we fast forward a month and we go to July, you can see Ukraine has taken a little bit more of terrain. Now we fast forward to August, and you can see Ukraine has started to take more terrain. Go to September. You can see Ukraine has taken more terrain, and this was hard fought. About this time, Ukraine started to lose a little bit of steam, but they weren't done yet. Moving into October, we can see that Ukrainian lines did advance a little bit further, and in November, they opened up just a little bit more, and that's about where it stops. Now, unfortunately for Ukraine, it looks like they had fallen into a trap, and the Russians continued to grind away on them inside this little bowl that Ukraine had punched out. Fast forward to December, and we can see no significant changes. Then we get into January, and we start seeing Russia begin to take terrain back as they're throwing more and more troops into the grinder and as Ukraine starts running out of ammunition. Fast forward to February, Russia's taking a little bit more, and fast forward to March, present day, and we see Russia continues to push on in an attempt to envelop the city of Robotnya. Now I'd like to zoom out for a second and take you guys on over to Avdiivka. You see Ukraine has a very strong foothold in this terrain. Fast forward again to July, and we don't see a huge territorial shift. Do the same thing, go to August. Minimum shift, same thing. Go to September, minimum territorial shift. Fast forward to October, no territorial shifts. Fast forward to November, a little bit more envelopment starting to come around Avdiivka. Fast forward to December. Again, this is about the time Ukraine receives its last shipment from the United States, and we can see Russian forces attempting to penetrate. However, Ukraine's still able to hold on. However, once we go to January, we see Russia taking more terrain. And then in February, we see Ukraine still holds. However, Russia starts making more minimal advancements. When we fast forward to March, we can see that Russia had completely taken the territory and they have pushed well past Ukraine's retrograded positions. Of course, as many of you know, Ukraine was ordered to withdraw from the city itself, and Russia continued to push on beyond it. And unfortunately, we are seeing the same thing along the front line. Now, while we talk about these being huge territory shifts on the map and devastating blows for either Ukraine or Russia, the fact of the matter is Russia still owns about 20% roughly of the terrain inside of Ukraine. That amounts to a little over 40,000 square kilometers. In the last 30 days, we've seen Ukraine losing vast amounts of terrain across the front, essentially taking the last year's counteroffensive and turning it into a wash. However, the amount of terrain that Russia was able to take came at a cost, and some of those costs came out today stating that they are averaging about 1,000 Russian deaths per day. Now, that number comes from a UK intelligence official speaking on the matter. Now, aside from UK intelligence stating that that number is as high as 1,000 per day. Other sources are also stating anywhere between 950 to 1,000 during the month of February of 2024. Now, this high casualty rate for Russia did not start in 2024. As a matter of fact, it started several months ago at the tail end of 2023 when Russia realized that Ukraine's munitions were drying up and they took advantage of it. This graph on your screen came out from Clash Report, and it represents on average by month the amount of Russian troops who were killed inside of Ukraine. The bottom line on your screen denotes 2022, the second line up denotes 2023, and the third line all the way at the top denotes 2024. Now, if you reference 2023, what you'll notice is right around the September to October timeframe is when Russian casualties started to climb. And that is the same time that we started getting word that the United States aid for Ukraine was going to run dry if something didn't happen. And then we saw politics kick into play, and it looked like a darker and darker forecast for Ukraine on getting the munitions that they actually needed from the United States of America. Using the best estimates available, we can assume that 28,560 Russians lost their lives in the month of November of 2023. In December, it is estimated that 29,977 Russians lost their lives during the war. And in January, the numbers dropped a little bit to just over 26,000. And lastly, in February, 28,507 Russians lost their lives. That brings the grand total to over 113,000 estimated Russian lives lost in just the last 4 months alone. Now, the battle for Avdiivka had gone on for quite some time, and it is estimated that right around 30,000 Russians lost their lives taking Avdiivka. However, in the final days of Avdiivka, during some of the fiercest fighting when Russian meat waves were being thrown at it left and right, it was estimated that while bullets were flying, around 40 Russians a minute were losing their lives. Now, to put that in perspective for you, during World War II, US lost right around 400,000 service members killed in action. Now, why are these troop numbers such a big deal when we talk about Russian losses? Current Russian strength inside of Ukraine sits between 300,000 to 500,000 estimated. And the Russian military is attempting to keep up with recruitment numbers to match their troop losses to backfill. Only problem is Russia is currently only recruiting about 10,000 service members a month. Now, it doesn't take long to do the math and determine that 1,000 troops a day being lost and only 10,000 being recruited a month is going to create a deficit. That is to say that Russian troop numbers are dwindling. If we were to take a conservative estimate and put it at 400,000 Russian soldiers currently inside of Ukraine and over 100,000 Russians lost in the last 4 months alone, that would mean Russians are currently operating at about 70 to 75% capacity. It is important to remember that these are estimates. However, the information I'm about to give you is not an estimate. It is quite literally how militaries determine their combat effectiveness. Now, inside the military, units are considered combat effective as long as they're able to maintain around 85% of their allotted strength. Now, once those numbers drop down below 85%, all the way down to 70%, they are considered combat capable. However, they have deficiencies. That is, they cannot fight as nearly as effective as a fully outfitted unit. Anything below 70%, a unit is then considered ineffective because they do not have the ability to fight. Regardless of the equipment that they have available, they just don't have the numbers and boots on the ground. While artillery is the king of battle, infantry is the queen for a reason, maneuvering around the battle space, effectively taking what is theirs. Now, as we talk about combat effectiveness, troop numbers are only one part of the equation. The other part is whether or not they have the ability to fight, what Ukraine's currently dealing with. So how does Russia stack up? We know that Ukraine's weak right now because the United States hasn't been supplying them what has been promised. Last year, the EU also promised to deliver right around 1 million artillery shells to Ukraine, and that number fell drastically short with less than 50% of that being supplied. Now, right after this, we're going to get into Russia's actual combat capabilities. They've been sourcing a lot of ammunition from the DPRK. How has that been working out for them? Stay tuned to find out. Every morning on the podcast, you guys see me pouring and drinking coffee, but did you ever wonder what was in my cup? Ever since I joined the military, everywhere I went in the world, I made sure I had a way to make and enjoy a cup of hot coffee. I can't explain it, But there's just something soothing about having a fresh cup of coffee in the morning when you wake up. Luckily, I'm no longer overseas trying to pack along or find the best coffee. Instead, I get it delivered straight to my doorstep thanks to Trade Coffee. Trade is a subscription service that sources coffee from over 55 local roasters from across the country. Trade maps your specific preferences to hundreds of different coffee flavor profiles. Their technology pairs you with the best coffee using art and science, marrying industry expertise and machine learning. Trade roasts your coffee to order and delivers it exactly when you need it. The first bag I received from Trade was Airship Black Bear Coffee. The roasting date was stamped right on the bag. The flavor profile was a perfect match to what I'd requested and had my kitchen smelling amazing. Right before I thought I was about to run out, boom, second bag arrived at my doorstep. No more early morning trips to the grocery store when you forget to buy your coffee. Trade makes sure it's there before you need it. There's multiple ways to experience coffee with Trade. Sign up for a subscription or try one of their starter packs today. Visit drinktrade.com/speakthetruth to sign up and save $15 on select plans and get your first bag of coffee free. That's drinktrade.com/speakthetruth to get the special offer for Speak the Truth listeners. Join me in drinking the best coffee, freshly roasted and delivered right to your doorstep. Now, as most of you know, last year, Putin went and met with Kim Jong-un all the way out in eastern Russia, one of the first times that Kim Jong-un had actually left the DPRK. During that meeting and several others by General Shoigu, Russia was able to acquire over 1.5 million artillery shells from the DPRK, with the bulk of them already have been delivered into Russia, and they are currently being used on the front line. Ukrainian intelligence came out not too long ago stating that those shells that were supplied by the DPRK are actually malfunctioning at a very high rate, upwards of 50%. Now, why is that? A lot of the shells supplied by the DPRK are from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. With that being said, they were also produced in North Korea. They are not exactly known for the best production standards. This has forced the Russian military to have to inspect every shell before they send it forward to the front to be used. Now, having personally received munitions in combat from the 60s and 70s, particularly mortar rounds, I can tell you that no matter how many times they're inspected, and they make sure they're sealed and they make sure they were stored properly and everything looks good to go, they're going to fail. And it wasn't just with mortars that I had that issue. I also had that issue with grenades. So based off my own experience with old munitions from the United States inventory while in combat, which I know was stored and produced correctly to standard, and we still had about 50% failure, I can only imagine that the number is at least 50% failure rate for those artillery shells that came out of the DPRK. So what would that look like for soldiers on the front line? Well, it's one of two things, more than likely. Either one, they are failing to fire, which is a big pain in the butt. Or number two, they do fire, but they fail to detonate on impact, which is likely why the Ukrainians know this figure. It's kind of common sense when you think about it. You hear the artillery go off, you hear the artillery coming in, but there's no boom. Now, according to Ukrainian intelligence, these numbers are being reported across the front lines in Ukraine. So what looked like a huge advantage for the Russians securing 1.5 million shells actually turned out to kind of be a pain in the butt for them. When you add that up with their attrition rate currently taking place, all of a sudden we start to have a problem. Now, the Ukrainians aren't doing so hot themselves. Ukraine currently has right around 500,000 troops with around 200,000 on active duty and less than 100,000 stationed along the front lines. Some estimates put the number of Ukrainian troops on the front around 80,000. But currently, Ukraine is not operating in offensive capability. They're operating in a defensive capability, and this plays to their advantage when it comes to the war on attrition. Just like we saw in Avdiivka, you must have more troops in order to overpower. The U.S. military conventional forces say that you need a 3-to-1 advantage in order to overtake a defensive position. However, those numbers start to drastically increase the more and more layered defense you add, and Ukraine has layered defense. This is likely why we saw large losses on the Russian side in order to take small chunks of terrain over the last several months. When you start to couple the troop losses with ineffective artillery that has been supplied to Russia, again, we start to have a problem. Right now, the Russian military is estimated to have around 400,000 troops inside of Ukraine. With over 100,000 losses taking place, Russia is operating somewhere around the 70 to 75% mark along the Ukrainian front. That means that they are borderline combat ineffective. So Russia doesn't have much longer of pushing up against the Ukrainians as hard as they have, sustaining those troop losses before they do become combat ineffective. Now, to make matters worse for Russia, when they're losing all these troops in order to continue to advance, they have to have well-trained soldiers to replace them. It's very easy on the defensive side to have soldiers that just know how to shoot straight. You put them in a position, you tell them, shoot in that direction, anything that's coming at you, and they're going to do okay. However, when it comes to offensive operations, you need to have trained troops in maneuvers and communications in order to be effective on the battlefield. And with over 100,000 Russian soldiers lost in the last 4 months, we can only assume the ones that will be backfilling are not going to be very well trained. That means that even if Russia gets the numbers required, they will still be combat ineffective for some time until those troops get enough frontline experience. So what does this mean for the war altogether? It means Russia cannot sustain its current pace. It did not see significant enough territorial gains to warrant that amount of troop loss. Further, if you were to keep up with the same attrition rate for the Russians, if they were to try to sack Kyiv, they would be out of troops before they even reached the river. Now, on the flip side of the equation, we have the Ukrainians who are currently under-equipped. It is estimated that no later than June, if something doesn't change, they will be out completely of their reserve ammunition. Now, luckily, countries such as Czechoslovakia have came to the rescue, essentially crowdfunding over a million rounds of ammunition for the Ukrainians with an estimated delivery date of the next couple weeks of at least 400,000 of them split between them and the EU. However, don't get excited because Ukraine is currently depleted on ammunition, meaning they have to build their stockpiles back up before they could even consider going on the offensive. Additionally, Ukraine isn't guaranteed more ammunition from anybody else in the world. While there's efforts being made, Ukraine also has to weigh what just took place in U.S. politics that caused such a significant loss on their side. Now, at the height of the counteroffensive, Ukraine was shooting right around 7,000 artillery shells per day. Currently, Ukraine is shooting less than 2,000 shells per day, likely estimated in the neighborhood of 1,000 to 1,500. Russia, on the other hand, is shooting around 10,000 shells per day. However, that hasn't stopped their troop losses. And about 50% of those shells, as we just discussed, are ineffective. So even after Ukraine receives this ammunition in the upcoming months, they are still going to have to hold off and recoup and reorganize. Now, the one key factor that comes into play that we haven't discussed this entire time is the F-16s Ukraine is about to get. Now, the over 20 F-16s that Ukraine has received should be on station on the front line somewhere in the springtime of this year. And truthfully, they couldn't come soon enough because Russia is now estimated to begin a new offensive in the springtime. And with warmer weather hitting the Ukrainian front, that could kick off sooner than later. However, even if Russia kicked off an offensive today, they do not have the capability to press on, in my opinion, longer than 30 to 45 days. At that point, they're going to run out of troops and become combat ineffective. However, the Kremlin is known for just throwing people into the meat grinder. So here's the positive side. If they decide to continue the attack, even though they are combat ineffective, Russia's death toll is going to increase significantly. Now, it is estimated by the end of this year, if we were to keep up the current pace and average over the last several, Russia is likely to surpass over 500,000 dead soldiers. However, with the rate that Russia has been going the last several months and the fight that the Ukrainians have put up, that number is likely to be over 750,000 if they were to keep up the same pace. And truthfully, it might increase. Now, what does that mean for Russia? Because currently their numbers are not that high. That would mean that every soldier on their front line would be wiped out. You would have very few left. Now, this would not spell victory for Russia. And if you think they're combat ineffective now, wait until that happens. My prediction is within the next week to 2 weeks, we are going to see the front line go back into a stalemate due to the significant number of losses by the Russians. They simply cannot keep up. They are not recruiting enough and they can't get their logistics in order to get more troops to the front line. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I am your host, Matt Tardio. Peace, love, happiness. God bless. Ladies and gentlemen, I am out of here.